Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Tony Vicinda, chief alchemist of Plus 1 EXP and one of the organizers of Zine Month. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We're really excited to talk. So this is going to be us kicking off our Zine Month coverage. We did a Zine Month series in 2024 that everyone really liked and was a lot of fun. And we got to meet a lot of new designers. And because you are so instrumental in organizing Zine Month, we thought, what better way to start out this coverage than by talking to you? So most people listening to the show probably already know what Zine Month is. But for anyone who is uninitiated, can you tell us in the briefest terms, what is Zine Month and why is it so cool?
Yeah, Zine Month is a non-platform-based month. It happens every year in February where different RPG creators are encouraged to create zine length, which, you know, we can get into the nitty-gritty of what a zine is or isn't, but let's just say roughly like 12 through 64-ish page, like half-page little games. Could be an adventure, could be a supplement, could be a fully standalone game. There's all kinds of content you could make, but it's basically in February, make a small little something that is RPG related and comes out in zine format on whatever platform you want to. You can release it directly. You could be crowdfunding it for release later on this year, which is what a lot of people do, or, you know, just making it and spending time enjoying the creative process just for your own, just for yourself, just for you and your friends or your home table.
And when you kind of look at Zine Month within, obviously you know, you're a full-time publisher. When you look at it within the broader ecosystem of our industry, why is Zine Month so important by your measure?
Oof. Zine Month, I think a lot of folks will know that maybe some people won't, grew kind of out of the Zine Quest movement, which is owned by a company like that IP. They let the website lapse and Metalweave Games picked it up, which was smart of them. It was owned by a company and there was a lot of frustration every single year with, is it happening? What's happening? Is a VP in that company abusing his status on the platform to manipulate other people into making a product that ends up platforming horrible people also too? There's lots of things that might happen during a zine quest. Zine Month was really the desire by a number of folks, some of whom have their own studios, some of whom don't, to just say, what if the community really just took ownership of making every February a time where we did this, where we really engaged in zine culture. The history of Zine Month and Zine Quest is where a lot of modern RPG designers that a lot of folks follow and get excited about when they release things. It's where they got their start. It's a really easy entry point into creation because you're intentionally making something that's small. And I think what it's really grown into is a time for folks to learn a lot about how to make something, how to publish something. We exist in a hobby industry, and that's not a bad thing. Lots of people are like, oh, well, are you saying there aren't professionals in the field? There are, but overwhelmingly, the people who make games, a lot of them are GMs at their home table who are making something for them and their friends to play with, who then may put it up on, you know, Itch or Drive-Thru or something else. And there are other people who are like, I want to do this, but I don't want to do it full time. There are very few people who make it their full-time living. But at the end of the day, it's also a hobby. It's a game we play. It's a thing we enjoy. It's a thing we love that we've all rallied around. And so I don't know if you know this, but not everybody has a professional background in publication or fulfillment or finances or all the things and all the little hats you have to wear that go into that. And so a big part of Zine Month has become, how do we distribute and share that information in the community? And how do we help people do things better, or at least in a way that's more, for me especially, in a way that's more sustainable. Because I think when we say better, there's all kinds of things that flash in our head, but in sustainable, like if you want to do this again, you're able to not go bankrupt or go insane or any number of things along the process of trying, or just get burnt out and not want to do stuff anymore, right? So creating those more sustainable processes is a huge part of what, and sharing them during the month of February is also a huge part of what Zine Month is all about.
I think last year was the first year that I really paid attention to Zine Month. Like we interviewed a bunch of people and I got to see things. And what's really exciting about this year is seeing the people who we interviewed who were doing their first Zine Month project last year coming back with something this year and having it being even bigger and better, like having learned from the community during this time. It is really like sharing and communal time, which is really great.
It is really cool to see people just like dive in and go deeper.
I love that you brought up sustainability. That's like one of our, you know, if we had a word cloud for Talk of the Table, sustainability would be quite large for us. And I think that we're going to talk a lot about the resources that get shared. But one of the biggest ones is what you're saying about information. So I think maybe a good place to start windowing in this information is, are there three questions, maybe less, that you can identify that you get all the time from designers coming into Zine Month that we can put on record, put on mic here to help people out?
Yeah, I think they come in a couple different ways. But one is like, hey, I want to do this. How do I tell people about it, right? Like whether that's marketing, whether that is sales, or that's just general, like I'm excited and I want people to know. But like, I think it falls underneath the big bucket of kind of like marketing. The other one that we hear overwhelmingly is like, hey, so when I'm done, like, how do I get these to everybody, right? Like, how do I ship these? How do I, get these out to people? We would call those maybe fulfillment or logistics or, you know, any other number of things. And then the other big one is like, hey, who, and this is, you know, very big, but who can help me with this, right? Like, and those come up with the first two, but it is also like, I need art, or I'm looking for an editor, or I just don't want to do this by myself. I think I put out my number one piece of advice was because I see people kind of asking the question sometimes without even knowing they're asking it, right? Like they're just saying, well, I don't feel like I can do this by myself, which is asking the question in a lot of ways. Like, is there someone who could help me? Is like the best way to make a small project is the same thing that is oftentimes great about adventuring parties. It's just a bunch of idiots who want to do the same thing, getting together and going on a journey together, right? Trying to figure things out. And you don't necessarily all start like super proficient at what you're doing. The goal is to continue to get better as you're kind of on that journey. So, you know, finding a couple people you can go and be dumb with and figure things out with together, I think is one of the best parts. The goal is everybody starts with enough skills to get you through the, you know, initial part of the journey. But like, sometimes we'll find artists who are like, I wish I could make things for people, but nobody ever wants to hire me. Or a writer who's like, I can't afford art. And we're like, well, what if y'all just did this together and just split the profits? Like, what if y'all just worked on a project? And if you each have an idea for a project, cool. Just pick the order you're going to do them in, right? Or do a duet set where you're doing each of your ideas as part of this. I would say if it's your first time out, maybe don't do two things at the same time, but, you know, figure out but if that's what's the most like cogent and equitable thing for the two of you, like that's fine. Cause now you have a buddy that you're doing it with. Right. And so, I think that's the other one. So, you know, it's marketing, fulfillment, and then like, is there anybody who wants to help with this, or anybody who can help me with this? I think tend to be the three big questions that come up.
So maybe it makes sense to kind of take those in turn as we talk about some of this other stuff. So like marketing, I think marketing as now somebody who's been doing this for a few years is still the hardest part. It's still the part that like, even when it's not your first, you know, thing go around, it's still the thing that you like are running up against. Like, how do I do this? Where do I start? What are the marketing things that every Zine Month designer should be trying to do?
It gets referred to a lot both during Zine Month and not. It was actually kind of what pulled me into Zine Month. Like I'd been talking to Charlie before Zine Month started about kind of what they wanted to do, what it was going to be, because we were all pretty upset. And one of the reasons we did it because of just continually not knowing if Zine Quest was happening. But also then Kickstarter took a really weird line on AI, which they have since, you know, backpedaled. And we were like, well, screw this. Let's go do something else that we can decide about. So Charlie and I had been talking about it from the get-go. And then it was the first question. People were like, we just don't know how to get the word out. And I was like, look, I know how to make a press kit and I know how to engage media, both because I make content, so I know what I like and how I want to be contacted, but I also do it well. Like I'm able to reach out to people and get them to look at what I'm doing. And a big part of that is I knew how to make a press kit, right? A very simple one, maybe two page, but ideally just one page kind of explainer of here is the thing I'm trying to do. Here are some key text. Here are some core images. And so I was like, can I host a workshop and maybe we can do a couple workshops and I'll host them. Like there was really no real plan for it other than like, hey, people keep on asking this question rather than me answering it 100 times. What if we just made a video that explained it? And it is historically been in one of the most popular videos on our channel because people are weird sicko freaks who hate marketing but really, really love a workshop video on it over on our YouTube channel. And like, I'll get flagged down to random servers when I say things. If somebody is like, hey, I just wanted to know, I just launched this. So building the press kit. And the other big thing it did, and this is coming from like before they were all on a team together, but like Lynn and Chase and other folks in media were like, oh man, the best thing about press kits is like they're coming to us now and it's so easy because we don't have to go back and forth asking for a million things. People now have given us everything we need. So it was really helpful for creators to know, hey, here's how you make one, and really helpful for journalists and marketing folks and people who make content and people who review games, because all of a sudden everything they need to make overlays, the images they needed to put in an article, like the synopsis, some of the quotes from other people were all in kind of one place. And because everyone was riffing off our format that we gave them, they're all pretty uniform. And so it's pretty easy to look around and find exactly what they needed. And it was really helpful to everybody just to have that little piece of information kind of out the thing. The other big thing I'll shout out about the press kit video, and I talk about in there, or writing press kits generally, is it actually starts you on the right path for what information needs to go on your Kickstarter or your backer kit or your itch funding campaign page. Because it's the first time you're saying, let me think about how I'm communicating this information intentionally to somebody else in as concise of a format possible. So once you have that down, that every time you go to then sit down and have to do it over and over again, it's already written and you've got a place you can just go copy, paste, expand, you know, rearrange. And so for me, who has like low executive function, once I have that done, being able to just go copy and paste it somewhere else is so huge. And being able to then click other boxes off and knowing that they're, that having all that information down is a helpful tool reinforces my need to do it. So it's the number one thing I always tell people, not just because it's a video that we produce. Like, I don't care if you watch our video, make a press kit. It's incredibly helpful. And then you'll have in that all the little pieces that you need to post out on social, give to other people, and let other people start to amplify what you're trying to do.
I do also just want to underline the element of a press kit that's great, that now everything is in one space. You've thought about it and you can, it's all there. You can just copy and paste every time you need it. This is just your well to go from, to go to anytime you need to post anything about your project now.
People make fun of me because I develop patter, but like everybody should have a pretty quick, like I gave somebody feedback today because their game absolutely is going to rip. It looks absolutely amazing. Their elevator pitch had a lot of like very specific terms in it that it's like, if I don't know what this is, I would still be totally interested in your game. But if I don't know what this is, I'm never going to know that. So like thinking about how you stay concise but broad is like a super hard thing to do. And as soon as you can start practicing that and getting feedback from other people on what makes sense and what doesn't, like it's super helpful to refine down to like exactly what you want to do. Because like for me, their game, and this will, you'll hopefully y'all will see this one and think it's really cool. My pitch for their game would be like, it is a card management RPG where you physically destroy each other's decks and each other's characters, right? Like that would be my like hook on that. Like it is very much a card battling game. But I was like, just lean in on like destroying, like the physical destruction of the other, like that's a really strong hook. The other things you're tying it into are great if people know about those things, but I would be excited and I don't know what half those things are, right? Like, so like just really honing in on what language makes sense for that.
And it's always the thing to remember, like we have the phrase, judge a book by its cover for a reason. We judge a book by its cover and then we look on the back, we read the back. And if we like both of those things, then we go a little deeper. Give people that like easy entry point, then let them go a little bit deeper. And then now you can give them the full meat of the thing.
Yeah, I gotta just like underline also that press kit video. That was my first zine month was when you put out that video, and I've referenced it on the show before for people who listen. Like, it is still my gold standard structure for press kits. I use it for every many-sided media press kit. I've used it for every game press kit, and I often am complimented when I send press kits on them being very thorough. So we'll link that in giant bold letters in the bio. Please go check out that video, and it makes a huge difference. It makes it possible for as an individual to get your game covered, which feels like one of those things that when you're first starting is like, why would anyone cover me as an individual? And it's like, well, if you give them everything that makes it an easy yes, they're likely to.
And anybody who's in that position who's listening right now, like desperately, like during Zine Month, people want to cover your new, like if you are a new or first time creator, like we are probably more excited about covering your stuff, or at least I am. Like, you know, Elliot and Brian can make up their own minds.
No, for
like,
sure.
I love Adam Voss, right? World Champ Game Co. Like, love it. I'm going to go back their stuff. I'm going to shout their stuff out. I'm not going to cover Adam's stuff other than some offhanded mentions like this one, because Adam has the capacity to go out and do that work. Like, Adam knows how to do that, knows how to, like, work their email list, how to get the word out about his projects. And so, like, we will almost always give priority to first-time creators because they don't, and we want to give them that leg up. Like, you are getting a community that's going to rally around you, and you being a first-time creator is a thing to highlight. It is not a deficit during Zine Month. Like, it's a real advantage.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's a thing I want to talk about within marketing that I know when everyone starts a campaign, you have your plans for marketing, and then you get 7 days in, or even like 3 days in, and those funds start to trickle off and you feel like you've already done your big push. I think everyone knows inherently, like, what's a good way to market in the first 2 days? And they might understand how to market in the last 2 days, that middle 20 something days where it feels like this is never going to end and you may or may not fund. Do you have any advice for getting through the doldrums in that time?
Yeah. So my general press plan that I'll talk people through is, it really sucks. One, what you're talking about is real. Two, there's real solid wisdom in just having a 12 to 17 day campaign, because there's some flexibility in there on why specific dates might matter. There's a reason to launch on a Tuesday, and it's not because it's what Kickstarter prefers. It's because of how email marketing works. There's a reason to not end on a Sunday. Same thing. It's because how email marketing works, not because of how Kickstarter works. There's a whole lot of things that can kind of go into that. But yeah, here's what's going to happen. Your first 48 hours, hopefully you're going to get a lot of pledges, right? Because typically most of the time, that's when people who want to back you, who want to support you, who want to come in and like give you their money, they're going to show up right away. There, hopefully that means the algorithm, if you're on certain platforms, are starting to favor you. If you're just using, you know, like a slow funding method like Itch or your own website, you won't get those, but you're still going to get that initial pop on kind of day one and day two for that. And that's great. And yeah, what happens is your endorphins just start kicking in. Your brain starts producing all these like chemicals that are about excitement and energy, and you're hyped. And then all of a sudden that stops, and your body has spent 2 days in like on edge keyed up mode, and you are going to hit a pretty heavy depressive state like third to seventh day in when those funds stop.
Can confirm.
Yeah, because here's the hard thing to tell you. It is not because you are actually feeling bad. It's because of the way the chemicals do in your brain. It's because money is horrible and capitalism sucks and it's gone now. And your mind knows to be excited about that money when it's coming in, and it knows to be sad about it. But it's really just chemicals flooding your brain. Like, and that's something you have to kind of remind yourself, like, this may not be that bad. Do I need to market more? How have I already met my goals? If I've already met my goals, maybe I can just be okay, even if this is hard, right? But let's say you haven't, you need to keep on going, which is the actual question. My big thing is, before your campaign, you want something that you can promote every 3 days, right? So in a 14-day campaign, let's say, you essentially want 5 or 6 things you can promote. Because on day one, the day before day one, like day negative one, you can say, hey, I've got a Kickstarter launching tomorrow. Like, please go follow it if you haven't. On day two, you're going to say, hey, my Kickstarter launched today. Please go follow it. On day three, you're going to say, hey, my Kickstarter launched yesterday. Please go check it out if you haven't, or share it if you have. And then you're going to feel like, I don't ever want to say it to go to my Kickstarter again. And you're going to feel like you're just begging people for money on the internet. It's way easier if it's like, hey, I've got an interview with the team over at Multisided Media on tomorrow. Check it out. Hey, I've got that interview today. Hope you can listen. Hey, did you check out that interview yesterday about my Kickstarter? If you have 6 things like that, or even 3 or 4 things like that in a 14-day campaign, it makes it easier to start talking about the content, and you're doing it at exactly that model. Here's what's happening tomorrow. Here's what's happening today. Here's what's happening yesterday. So that you have something to post every day, but you don't need something new for every single day. And that might sound like a lot, but you can, if you're not getting media coverage, hey, here's a contributor that I'm really excited about. Here's why I picked the editor I'm working with, right? Like, I want to tell you a little bit about, you know, another project they've done today, right? And tag those people out. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit more about, you know, why they've been a great partner for me tomorrow. And then on the last day, I'm going to tell you, you know, just remind you to go check out those things if you haven't yet. Right? It doesn't have to be media, but it gives you something to talk about that doesn't feel selfish, is still pointing at your project, which is what you have to do. And it doesn't make it feel like you need something new every day. So planning out, you know, dividing your campaign essentially by three and thinking about having a new conversation to start kind of every third day that's highlighting something that you care about is huge. If you have a big team, I start highlighting them typically in advance, and then I'll come back and re-tag them during it, right? Here's why I'm so excited to work with somebody. Typically, those will precede any project I'm working on, and I'll just go point at all their cool stuff, right? And then drop my Kickstarter page because I'm typically just excited to work with that person and honoring their contribution because overwhelmingly, none of us are paying each other enough, right? And everybody knows that, and that's all fine. By sharing their other work is a huge win for somebody who's probably going to do the same for you in a couple of days when your project goes live, right? So starting to think and kind of beat out like for after that first 48 hours, because that first 48 hours, it's like, hey, we launched, right? It's going, please go back it, right? Direct ask. Then after that, here's the podcast I'm on, here's the blog covering me, here is the Rascal article, which you can just go post one. You don't even have to wait. You take all the information from your press kit and just go drop it in as an announcement. And using those things as tools to be able to continually talk about it without saying the same thing over and over again is huge. And then I don't hit every Facebook group or, you know, Discord community on day one because it's noise. It's a lot of noise, a lot of projects launching. If people see my thing in six places, they're not going to go do it. And a lot of places would prefer you didn't just constantly post in their community about your thing. You know, once a week is usually enough. Coming back on day seven and having left some really intentional communities that I'm like, now that I'm past the, you know, the communities that I'm very well known in, I'm going to take that next step out and go like post a little bit about my project in some of those communities is a good thing to do on day seven also too.
Yeah. I love what you said about like the, even if you don't have any events, the team can be a part of marketing as well. And like you hear that sentence and like I could see people being like, oh, that sounds bad. But it's like to the benefit of your team to use their name and highlight their work. And I think that like one of the things that I always do with projects is I send the team an email the night before a project launches. And I say, hey, we're launching tomorrow. As much or as little as you're comfortable sharing, like I would love it if you at minimum interacted with me. Here are two assets you can use on day one if you would like to. And like making it really easy for your team to get excited about the project, because if they're working with you, they're probably excited about the project and want it to succeed. Because if it succeeds, they get paid, you do well, you're more likely to work together in the future. Which I think I like can transition that into, okay, how do we find that team? How do we find these collaborators to work with?
There's, you know, like I look at, so ZineQuest, the first ZineQuest saw a lot of really cool collaborations, and it was around that time. And I'd have to go back and look at specifics, whether Brain Trust really immediately grew out of the first ZineQuest or whether it was other stuff that Adam and Will were doing together separately from that. But it was around that same time that Brain Trust Discord community really kind of popped off. And really in the next second and third wave of ZineQuest, you saw a lot of people who were like, hey, I followed what Adam and Will were doing, and I got in that community, and we talked about design, and there were people who were willing to promote things, and there were people who were artists, and there were people who were primarily editors, or who liked writing mechanics, or who liked writing, you know, narrative or lore. You started seeing all these different temperaments, and people just started working with each other, and started doing things together, and started saying, like, oh, I love what you do, you know, do you want to go work on this thing together? And you know, now there's a whole kind of set of Discords and other publishing communities and groups and collaboratives that have grown out of that initial kind of kernel idea, a lot of whom are still active in that community, but a lot of whom have gone on to have their own very vibrant communities that they spend most of their time in and do a lot of their design collaboration in. You know, finding people who do work that you like and going and being a part of that community, and then overwhelmingly, most of those communities have a place where they'll post out when people are looking for something and just hopping on and trying, or just saying, hey, I'd love to work with somebody. Or if you see somebody else who's posting about wanting someone to help them and it's something you do, just offering and being transparent around like, this is my first time to do it, but Facebook groups and Discord communities that are managed by people whose work you like, finding other people who like that work is the easiest way to do it. And I would throw out, like, if you like Merkborg, if you like Mothership, like, they both have great third-party communities that focus specifically on that design.
Just specifically to drill down on something there, are there any Facebook groups or Discord communities specifically that you would recommend that people check out?
I mean, I would throw out that the RPG Zines Facebook group that I do now admin. Like, I've taken over that group through a bloodless coup.
It was poison.
No,
everybody.
Tim said, hey, I don't feel like I give this group enough energy. I feel like you're in there all the time. Do you want to just take it over this last year? And I said, oof, give me 2 days to think about that. Well, I was pretty sure I would already say yes. So RPG Zines Facebook group, if you're elder millennial like me and still on Facebook, or maybe even part of Gen X, who knows, then head on over to Facebook, go to the RPG Zines group. The Plus One Discord, super open and super welcoming. ttrpg.link/discord will take you straight over to our community Discord. We're big fans of it. But I mean, the number one for Zine Month would be the Zemo Discord, would be the number one I would recommend. It is specifically what people are there to do. There is a looking for collaborator channel for exactly that. You know, I think being very, very open and transparent about those things are great. If you're somebody with a work portfolio, because you are an artist or a writer already, being ready to share that in those groups. Like, we move people into, like, we have a public community server, and then we have a working server for Plus One. We don't point people to our working server right away. Typically, we're like, hey, come get involved in our main server. Let us get to know what kind of person you are. Kind of get a sense of each other. And then, you know, if somebody has a work history, or if they just have a really good pitch for an idea, sometimes we'll move them over to our work server and say, how can we help you develop this specifically, right? And a lot of that comes through, like, Zine Club and other stuff like that. But sometimes we just see a really cool thing and we're like, how do we help with this? Or we see a creator who's constantly sharing great work and we're doing it. We have a, like, Strega, I don't think Strega needs the extra push, but Strega Von Wolf, like, is in that server and will regularly post things in our art channel. But if you're somebody who's like, I make art already and I just want to share it, or I write, or I do layout and I just want a place to drop samples and get feedback, that's a really great community to do it in. Zine Month One's a great community to do it in. And when I say having samples, don't hear that as like, oh, I need tons of work to show. You don't need to be prolific as other people. You need 3 to 5 things you're proud of to share with people, right? But we'll have people in there who will also just drop in, like, here's a character sheet I'm working on, right? If you're a designer, and we'll be like, oh, we love this. And then we'll proceed to be like, how much feedback you want and what kind of feedback. If they say, oh, I want you to just let me know what you would do to make it better, then we'll start tearing it apart. Like, it could be a B+, like, you know, like, really good character sheet. Cause a lot of character sheets are like barely passing, but it could be like a B+ already. And we'll like spend 2 days like going back and forth, talking about it with that creator to be like, this is the best character sheet your game could possibly have. Like, and you may not even have the rules written, but you've got, you know, a killer character sheet done. So you'll find communities like that. There's NSR communities. The Cauldron is great. There's the Brain Trust Discord that I've already mentioned is a really great community for that. I would say, again, look at the types of games you like to play or that you want to design in. Cause like Gauntlet has a great community, but if you show up there talking about Merkborg, Jason won't kick you out. Everybody will be very polite, but they'll be like, that's not really a thing we do here. Like, it's Trophy and Carved from Brindlewood games. A lot of conversations about the horror genre generally, both in all forms of media. So there's a lot of that, but you want to be really intentional about, does this match the community that I've landed in? You're going to find some very general ones and some very targeted ones.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude world. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's snake eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck.
Universe at Your Door, The Traveler, is a sci-fi TTRPG from Johnson O'Fair. You are the Traveler, on a mission to investigate extrasolar planets, gather and share knowledge, and do no harm. Venture beyond our solar system. Weave a tale of a life lived on exoplanets. Explore the beautiful mundanity that keeps you sane. And build the foundations of an extraordinary person through the memories you carry into the future. Play Universe at Your Door, The Traveler, as a solo journaling game, or build a crew with up to four friends and tell a GM-less story of the life and journey you have together. Universe at Your Door, The Traveler is crowdfunding on Kickstarter, February 1st through February 28th. To support this game, just search for Universe at Your Door, The Traveler on Kickstarter, or visit tinyurl.com/universetravel.
Bonds Between is a card-altering duet TTRPG about neighboring dragons bringing their rundown lairs back to life. Bonds Between is a slice-of-life two-player co-op game where you play the kinds of dragons you'd find in your backyard. Working together with your neighbor, you'll add everyday items to your cozy hordes and trade them to grow your power. With your combined magic, you'll cast spells to bring life and order back to your rundown lairs. To solve problems both magical and mundane, you will wreck your deck in the name of dragon magic, recoloring, cutting, and even burning your cards throughout the game. Each time you cast a spell, your deck, your magic, and your domain are changed forever. Bonds Between is currently crowdfunding on Kickstarter. To back this game, just search Bonds Between on Kickstarter. That's Bonds Between on Kickstarter.
I have one more thing I'll say on finding collaborators. Regularly, you will have bigger name people offer you something. Hey, I'm happy to do a free consult on your Kickstarter page. Hey, I'm doing editing. I have a set rate for new people. It's very affordable. Hey, no, I'm happy to do a quick image for you at a lower cost than my normal thing might be. And sometimes they'll even say like, oh, I've got this many I can do, right, for Zine Month specifically. And overwhelmingly, when I or other people offer that out, people go, this is so great. This is going to be so helpful for someone. I wish I had something like this for my project. Cool. Then why aren't we doing it for your project? Like, right. When people offer those things and you like their work, take them up on it. So often we will go an entire, like we'll offer something out that's either free or very affordable and go the entire month with no one taking us up on it while constantly asking, I wish somebody would help me in this way. And we will, oh no, you're too big of a deal, or this person, you know, Richard Ruane is too famous of a person or whatever. Like, I don't want to take up their time, or this could go to someone else. Just say yes if you need that thing. Like, we're offering it for a reason.
Elliot, do you want to remind the listeners of your catchphrase?
Yeah. I mean, this is my favorite catchphrase in the world is, he sends out emails, he gets back emails. And I will point to a personal example from my own work, is that when I did Project Echo for Zine Month 2022, Will Yopes put out on Twitter that they were available for editing work around that time. And in my mind, Will was this very big deal. And I was like, oh, they probably wouldn't want to work on like a like my first time project, like small project or whatever, but ended up sending the email and Will and I ended up working together. And it was like one of the best experiences that I've had in games. And like Will made me a better designer on that one project. And it's just like everyone's a person. They have emails available online if you look, or they're on Discord, and people often want to do it.
I will say just a thing to add to that. If you are going to reach out to someone that you think might, that you are worried about reaching out to, I would definitely take the time in your email to ask, be very specific about what you're asking for, be very specific about what your project is, and very specific about what you can or cannot offer. So if this is, I can't offer you any money, but that's totally fine, but say it right up front so that you're not putting someone else in a position of they now have to ask a question. Give someone all the details possible. They can make a decision based on that. Hopefully that decision will be yes, but if it's a no, at least they have everything available to them and they're leaving that interaction with a good feeling rather than feeling like I kind of had to work to say no and I don't really want to.
I think that one of the other things you brought up in there is this idea of like on these collaborative Discords, people will send things out and ask for feedback. And I think that feedback for a first-time game designer is something I want to pull out of there is that like, what's the advice you have for like a person who maybe for the first time is going into these community Discords and saying, hey, tear apart this thing I made, or working with an editor for the first time on their project and having to deal with like a real formalized kind of feedback? Like some people might not have done that in any kind of way before.
Yeah. Formalized editors, most editors I know, and you'll get a sense pretty quickly whether somebody is the right editing partner for you. Like, I even have people like I have team members who I have to check and be like, are you OK if I give you dev feedback? Right. Because some of them don't want it. I'm like, so don't ask for feedback if you don't want it is my number one thing. Or if you're in a community that gives a lot of feedback, ask beforehand to find out what is helpful for people or what they specifically are looking for feedback on. So you don't go so they don't post a character sheet and you go, oh, I hate all these fonts. They're the worst. Like, da da da. And they're like, well, these are the final ones. I don't need your help on, you know, like, and that's not, if they're not asking for that, for help on that, you know, like, you need to spend time on that. You know, you might be able to ask, like, hey, I also have some thoughts on fonts. Is that okay or whatever? But, you know, find out what type of things are most helpful for the person. Just asking and communicating that. And then asking editors when you're working with them, like, what's your process, right? One of the things I know about Will is, like, I hear that, like, I just always hear how, like, gentle they are, like, in their feedback, right? And how much better it makes people, like, they're very encouraging. They're, like, there's a lot of, like, supportive comments in addition to, like, critical comments. You know, we've worked with a number of different editors, and some of them I just send stuff off, and they send me back their changes, and I go, cool, that's grammar. That's how that works, right? Like, I'm not going to argue with them about, like, what are the rules of grammar? You know, we might establish a little bit of a style guide at the beginning. But typically big conversations like, do we want to do this or do we want to do that? If we're going to be consistent about, you know, a phrase we use, like there's usually a larger conversation. And sometimes those happen live or, you know, through a different communication process than like, here's me fixing your bad grammar, Tony. You know, but like we've worked with Walt Wood, who's really great. I've worked with Jared Crater, who's really great. Christian Sorrell Meat Castle is really phenomenal. You know, there's a lot, Joe, who does a lot of our in-house, the third Joe does a lot of our in-house editing. They all have different approaches to how they do things. And it depends on what type of editing they're doing, whether it's just, you know, line editing or copy editing, or whether there's some sort of developmental editing, like, hey, I want to help make your game better. Like, here are some, do you want suggestions on that? So knowing what you're getting into is a huge part of that. But then just also realizing at the get-go, like, you're not going to make a perfect game. And you're not going to make a, like, flawless thing. Like, I get some people whose work I get back, and I rarely ever need to do any editing besides maybe a few consistency or word choice items on what they've done. But there's a huge world there. I think, you know, when you're working with an editor, ask about their process. If you are posting in a Discord, just be prepared that people are not going to necessarily consider your feelings when you ask for feedback. And they're probably not trying to hurt your feelings. And it's okay to just pause and they say, hey, like, thanks for the feedback. Like, I'm going to think about that and move on. Like, you don't need to fight with them. But I think what is most helpful actually is like playtesting feedback in some ways, because that is a thing more people can mention. It's your friends. Your friends are going to be really supportive. Everybody, once you have played a game and they're in the middle of giving you feedback, are going to go like, oh, you should do this, you should do that. The thing you should always come back to if you're playtesting is asking the playtesters, if you can tell me what you like and don't like, that's great. I'm also okay hearing ideas you have on how to fix it. Or don't worry about telling me how to fix it. Just tell me what you like or don't like. Playtesters, even ones who are game devs, are being asked to come play your game to tell you what they like and don't like. You are not paying them to fix your game. And honestly, they probably don't know how to. Like, when I sit down to play test a friend's game, I am bad about this, but I usually will ask them ahead of time, hey, if I have some dev thoughts, do you want them? And if not, that's okay. I can just tell you what worked for me or didn't work for me. Because I'm going to solve problems in a different way than somebody else who sits down to play it, who has a different type of play culture or background or preference on different ways that they engage with a system. And you're going to get a lot of conflicting feedback if you ask people to solve problems for you. If you ask people to identify problems for you, you're going to get a lot of consistent feedback about typically what does not work and what does work though. So asking other people to identify problems for you is great. Asking people to solve problems for your game rarely ever works out the way that you want to or makes your game better. They should be kicking it back to you to do that. And if you want ideas from them, then it's great to ask. But that's development, and that's a different type of thing. And like I do game development, I dev systems for people, but then I have to get into that creator's mind and know what they want and know what they're trying to do to help them do that. That doesn't come from just sitting down and playing the game once or twice or three times.
Yeah, there's another thing you said in there about like, this will not be a perfect game. You will not make a flawless game. And I think that goes back to kind of something you were talking about at the beginning, that Scene Month is largely about getting something out there, experiencing the process of making a thing. And it's like, once you've made your first thing, you've made it. You know, like, nobody can take that away from you, whether this was just like one thing you wanted to do or you want to do it again. Like, that's kind of what it's more about than like making your, this is not going to be your, Zine Month is not going to be your magnum opus, I think is a good thing for people to remember.
Also, just remember, D&D is now in what, its sixth edition? Like, you can always do another edition later if you want to. People still aren't going to be happy.
Or fix things even in the same edition in a second printing. Like, one of the great, here's the deal. You're going to print 50 to 100 to 200 to 500 to maybe 1,000 copies of your game from your crowdfunding partner. That sounds like a lot. And you may not even sell all of the copies you print, but you might. You might sell all of them, and you might need to reprint in 6 months. And you can fix things then. Like, you can add more. You can change things and send people a new digital copy of the game and say, hey, we made some updates. Here's the new thing. We have a creator it took forever for us to get into Zine Club who I really love. And a big part of it was they're so hesitant to put things down into print, and it took a long time. And now they're already like they're doing another project with another publishing partner during Zine Month, right? Which is great. And like, we don't do weird toxic exclusivity things, so we're excited to go champion that project. But I remember having so many conversations with them, and I was like, look, we're going to print 500 copies of your game. And if there's changes we want to make, like, our hope is that we're going to do a bigger crowdfunding project with some adventures and other stuff in about 2 years for this title. We'll fix it then. And if we need to print more copies, and you know, like, zines themselves are iterative, and zines themselves don't have a culture of perfection. They have a culture of expression. And that is far more important. Like, bringing your voice to the forefront is a huge part of what zine culture is all about. And so figuring out, saying something is more important than saying it perfectly, right? Like, and that's a huge thing to just kind of keep in mind.
Well, so maybe this is a good time to round us out with that third big question of like fulfillment. So it's like, you make the thing digitally, you reach your goal. What are the pitfalls of fulfillment? What's the key pieces of advice you would give for like, okay, let's make this sucker and hold it?
You're probably not printing your game overseas, especially with everything going on in the world right now. You're probably not printing your game overseas. You need to be printing 500 copies at minimum, but probably closer to 2,000 copies in order for overseas printing to kind of make sense for zines, right? It can make sense for other things at slightly smaller numbers. So you're going to print with your local printer. Like, I would use Fireball here in Philly if I was using a local printer. You don't have to be in Philly to use Fireball. They're great. You can use them no matter what. Or Mixam is who overwhelmingly most of the zines that come through Zine Month. Or you're going to print them on, you know, your work copy machine and, you know, staple them together at home in your basement. Like, you know, that's there's a lot of different ways you can get them done. But the logistics of that is you need to make sure you can get them to your door. If you print overseas, it's a whole big headache. There's a whole lot of things with importing and exporting we don't need to dive into right now because it's not going to impact most folks. The big thing is just deciding, like, do you want to ship this yourself? Do you want to work with a partner? Do you want to outsource to a professional distributor, right? Like, those are kind of your three big options. And I would say if you're shipping, you know, 200 to 300 zines or less, like, shipping yourself is a really rewarding experience, especially the first time around. Reading your backer's name, being able to write notes, all that kind of stuff is really great. If you can find someone who has access to, or if you can afford as part of your Kickstarter funds, you know, about $150 for a thermal label printer that'll print on 4x6 sheets, you'll save yourselves a lot of headache. If you can take a CSV like sheet, an Excel spreadsheet, and upload it to a lot of different shipping softwares and platforms, or just do it all manually if you need to. But things like Pirate Ship and some other resources out there exist for a reason. They're great. You can upload a spreadsheet and get the amount it's going to cost and print out labels all from the back end from a number of different websites that will sell you cheaper than average posting. Or you can just get the addresses and hand label everything and go down to the post office and drive them insane for 2 hours a week, which is what I did when I was launching one of my first online e-commerce businesses for about 3 years. It wasn't 3 years. It was only 6 months, but it felt like a really long time. You know, so there's a lot of that. Rollo printers are the brand that I like the best. They're fast. They're good. I've had to replace a million Dymos. I've never had to replace my Rollo. I'm about to buy a new one just because there's a new wireless model out and I'm redoing the printing station, so why not? So you're going to do that. You're going to use either you're overwhelmingly going to want to use like rigid lay flat mailers or a bubble mailer with a rigid insert. You can don't purchase from Uline. They're a horrible company. They are inexpensive seeming and everything will be to you the next day. And I won't judge you, but you should not buy from Uline. They are a scummy company. However, there are plenty of places out there you can buy rigid lay flat mailers that are going to be 6 inches by 9 inches, which will fit 1 to 2 zines plus some patches or stickers or swag in there. And you're going to be able to get them for like 35 to 40 cents each. If you've got a bunch of other stuff you got to put in there, you got to buy some boxes and fold them. But none of that stuff is anywhere near as hard as you think it is. But if you're doing more than 200, you might be like, well, I don't want to ship them myself anyways. I want that to be somebody else's problem. Cool. If you ship them yourself, you can use media mail. You can charge your backers as little as like $4 and not lose money. If you use a partner, you're immediately jumping that up to $8 or $9 just because they're going to want you to pay for the boxes and they're going to want you to pay for the labor and they're going to want you to pay for the shipping. And you're going to take on half of that yourself if you do it yourself. And otherwise, you're going to pay people for that. So it's going to jump up a little bit more to, like, you know, from saying, hey, it's going to cost $4 or $5 to ship this zine to saying, like, hey, now it's going to cost like $9 to $10 to ship this zine, which is in the same country as you. If you're shipping overseas, it's even more right now. There's new laws for Europe that have to be followed that we're all still kind of figuring out. There's a lot of other things that with complexities with international shipping. It's very reasonable for Zine Month to just say, hey, I'm only going to do a couple hundred. I'm going to ship it myself. I'm not going to do international shipping. I can figure that out after the campaign. But if you use a partner, like we take on a handful of select clients like through Zine Month, you're welcome to reach out. I may very well say yes. I might say no. Typically, we work with folks who we are kind of invested in more generally, maybe we already print something of theirs. Maybe we're working with them. But if you're a new creator and you've got a really great idea, we're always happy to have a conversation. And we may even point you to other people who do similar work who are going to be a really good match for what you do also. So feel free to always reach out. Don't be offended if we say no. But yeah, we do some of that. But Floating Chair Club is great. Flying Cloud does Kickstarter fulfillment. They're who Exalted Funeral uses for shipping. There's a lot of great international services. I can't remember the name of
Peregrine.
Peregrine. Thank you. Peregrine's my my go-to international, though Soul Muppet does take on some projects from time to time and can help with some of that also, too. There are a lot of really smart people, especially when you're looking to do European fulfillment. Having a UK or EU-based partner is great. And Beyond Cataclysm is doing a lot. And there's a one in Canada that's starting an EU thing called Dream Something that I keep on wanting to talk to more and keep on forgetting to. So there's a lot of great partners out there. They're all going to have a pick-pack fee is what you call that labor cost. They're all going to have boxification fees. They're all going to have shipping fees. But then you're not going to have to worry. It's somebody else's problem, and they'll take care of you. We're about to do Jukebox from Last Zine Club is about to start shipping out. We're doing that because we've been invested in the project with layout, with consulting, with a lot of other stuff over the course of the life of the project. So we are helping with that one. Other IPR, you can reach out to IPR also too about shipping all your stuff. IPR does great work, and we really love IPR. So yeah, you can find a consolidator if you're even bigger. And then you might be huge, and so you might want to start launching your own website if you get really, really big, but really just kind of running it either, you know, through BackerKit or through an existing web platform that's going to help you collect those fees is great. Remember, if you collect shipping during your campaign, that you need to account for about 10% of those funds getting lost to the campaign also. So you got to charge a little bit more or eat that cost. I would say never give free shipping, no matter how cheap you think it's going to be. It takes a lot of time. It costs a lot more than you think it's going to. Don't do that. But yeah, shipping it yourself if it's a small order, looking for a partner if it's a bigger order, launching, you know, your own website if it's really big and really popular becomes, you know, more of a thing. But there's a lot of great tools and resources out there for that.
I do. I just want to highlight a thing there of if you are worried about any element of it, don't go too complex too quick. You can always do more after the campaign. If you promise it during the campaign, you're a little bit stuck. Don't take on more than you can chew if you don't have to. You can always do it right afterwards.
Yeah, don't glue a bookmark in the back of every book on your first big crowdfunding.
Yeah, I mean, and there's certain things you got to realize if you're planning on using media mail. If you stick a sticker in there, look, I don't think the USPS is probably going to open up your package and find it. But if they do, they'll start opening up every package that looks like it, and they will reject all of them, and you will lose all of that media mail. And then when you try to reship them, they will flag it out again. So look at what can be shipped by media mail and don't ignore those rules. Will you probably fly under the radar? Yes. Is it worth it if you do not? No. It's worth it just to charge people a package rate because that's what you're really shipping as. UPS and USPS are my preferred ways to ship currently. Also, DHL and FedEx tend to not do what you want them to do a lot of the time. And so, but yeah, it's really not that hard. You know, putting on a TV show in the background, zoning out for, you know, with the setup I have, I can personally, if it's a Kickstarter style fulfillment where you're doing the same packages over and over again, we can do about 800 to 1,000 packages in a day out of the house, which is a lot, but like we have a setup for it, but the setup is like $300 worth of stuff. Like it's not a huge amount of investment to have what you need to be able to just go when you're shipping the same thing over and over again, right? Like, because we get two people and we just assembly a line and pick pack and just breeze through it. And so yeah, I mean, you can do a lot with very, very little. We are going to do, as part of our professional development workshop again this year, we are going to have a fulfillment and logistics kind of deep dive that we're going to do. So we'll go a little bit deeper into that on the channel when we do that also.
Hell yeah. Brian, did you have any last things?
I feel like we could talk literally all day about this stuff, but I think bringing us to a head, Tony, before we ask you last question, is there anything more that you want to add to this conversation about Zine Month?
Yeah, I mean, get out there and back some zines. Look for small creators. Look for the weirdest games you can find. If this piqued your interest at all, if you want to come back and do more, hear more about what my thoughts on most of this stuff is, we're going to do 5 professional development workshops over the course of Zine Month. They'll be basically, I think they're going to be on Wednesdays. They'll probably vary on time based on the guests we have. They cover everything from refreshing on some of the new marketing and new crowdfunding platforms that are out there, how to build a page, logistics, how to handle the retail side of conversations, working with game stores, with your zine after the fact, how you get them into distribution, other stuff like that, along with a whole slew of other things we've seen kind of come up doing Zine Club this year. Like, what are the common questions that creators who we're working with are asking internally, and how we can use Zine Month as a way to create better content for our internal like processes, but also for the entire community. If you aren't a member of the Zemo Discord yet, that's a, I mean, you start there and you'll know when other stuff is coming out.
So this interview is only your first stop in your continuing education, trying to make zines professionally.
Hoping that the next workshop takes you home.
There we go. It's always one workshop away.
So Tony, our final question that we ask everybody who comes on Talk of the Table is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation. And when we're doing Zine Month, we always ask our guests to refer or recommend a Zine Month project. Or I know you're probably involved with many. If you'd like to shout out more than one, always welcome.
Let me try to limit it to five. One, Repugnant, which was a Zine Quest 3 project that I worked on with John DeCampos, has an expansion coming out. I did a little bit of dev and consulting work on it, but John's really carried the you know, full force of that, and it's his project for Zine Month. So it's called Repugnant, Scrap, and Spoils. It's got some new kin and some new mutations. Repugnant's the world's most disgusting RPG. It's also got a slightly more accessible system than the Covered in Chit system that I created for it originally. So it's got its own kind of modified special D6 system. So John's working on that. Keep an eye out for that one. So the one that I kind of had mentioned earlier, hey, I love the idea of this, and I think you've got some really strong things here, but you've got too many touchstones and other things kind of worked into your pitch. I don't even know that I'm pronouncing this right. It's by Neon Rot, though. Fukuzatsu, or Torrid Poker. And the concept is that you are using poker and tarot cards to build a deck and then fighting other people's decks. And then your destroyed deck will continue to move forward as kind of this living artifact as you challenge other people. It looks really cool. I've enjoyed, I got to contribute to one of Neon's previous projects as just like a little add-on writing. Because you know what? Neon asked me. And I said, hey, just to clarify, is this paid or unpaid? And he said, unpaid. And I said, how long is it? And he said, like five sentences. And I said, yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do it. Thanks for asking. I did a little stretch goal writing for them for a previous thing. But the Kickstarter page looks cool. The project looks cool. It's not something that I've ever seen exactly before. And so I'm very excited to back this super weird game by them. And then internally, we have a couple different things. We are slow funding Sooty Beards over on the Plus One website. Sooty Beards is a sister neutral dwarven settlement. It's going to lend very well into D20 plus games or Troika games or other kind of OSR, NSR games. You could probably use it for 5th edition also too if you really wanted to. It's got Furtive Goblin and John Gregory, who did the Book of Gob and a bunch of other stuff, have been just really gorgeous books. And then Charlie Ferguson Avery did all the art and layout. It's a really great supplement. If we get enough people buying that, we're going to release a new little micro pocket edition of some Troika backgrounds to go with that. But that's just all funding on the Plus One site. We're going to sell them all month long and then print as many as we sell plus some. We've got Salt the Earth by Quinn Blackwell. Quinn's a creator that we had join our team through Zine Club this year. We released one of their projects, and then we're getting ready for PAX, and I was like, I'd love to put some other new solo or trophy games on our shelf at PAX. And Wes was like, well, Quinn has a solo trophy hex crawl called Blueberry Wine, so we printed that also. So we've got a couple chances to work with Quinn already and publish some of their work. They're super prolific, though, so we're putting out Salt the Earth, which is their kind of very dark narrative forward NSR game where basically you get into fights and if you don't die, you get a scar. So basically losing fights is advancement. You got to get into as many fights as you can.
Cool.
Lose them, hopefully don't die, and get a little bit better at not getting beat up the next time. And then Keegan has actually tricked me into having a Zine Quest project. So Lost Phantasmia is going to be a haunted perfumery exploring the relationship between scent and memory that we are going to be funding as an adventure for Down We Go, I think, during Zine Quest also too. How many was that? Was that five? Did I do all five? That was the five. Yeah, those are the few things we are doing and that I am currently very excited about for Zine Month.
We will link all of those fantastic recommendations below, and also keep an eye on this podcast for eight more projects that we'll be interviewing over the next 4 weeks.
We're going to be shouting out a lot of Zine Month projects this month, so keep your wallet ready. Thank you, Tony, so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you?
Yeah, if you are looking for the work that Plus One does, we are at Plus One EXP across pretty much every social media platform as they come online, emerge, disappear, and then come back again even. So at Plus One EXP. I'm at Tony Vicinda personally across most things and pretty open to personal outreach also too, though I man all of our company accounts also too and use most of them as semi-personal accounts also too. So feel free to reach out either way. You can find all of the games that we do at plusoneexp.com. If you like Zine Month, but wish, man, wouldn't it be cool if zines came to my house all the time, all year long. You can join Zine Club also, too. You can go to rpgzine.club to check out the monthly subscription service we have there. It lets us invest more intentionally in small and emerging voices in the creative field. So if you like what Zine Month is about, but just wish that was kind of the entire year, you go to rpgzine.club and make that happen.
You can make it happen. Have this month happen in December, too. In August. In July, I say. And if you want more gaming content, hear from us at Talk of the Table. You can check out the 20-sided newsletter, about to be rebranded as the Many-Sided Newsletter, and also the Many-Sided Media Discord. Those are both linked in our show notes below. And if you want to support this show, we've also added a tier to our Patreon that is specifically for Talk of the Table. We're releasing monthly bonus episodes with me and Elliot, or roundtables like our most recent two-hour roundtable with Dr. Emily Friedman and Taylor Moore of Worlds Beyond Number, talking about all things actual play. So if you want to support this show and get some more cool stuff, check out patreon.com/manysidedmedia and join the dice pool. As always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.